This is...
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. Politrics.
Welcome to another edition of Hashtag Politrics with Botsang Modimo Mimuilwa. Happy Saturday. Hopefully you've got your warm cup of coffee or tea or whiskey or whatever you prefer on a Saturday morning if your party has done well or has done not so well. By the time this episode goes out, I'm certain it'll be clear, generally, which direction South Africans voted. And yeah, Godspeed, regardless. And hopefully you're not watching this in the dark because the power is still hanging on in there, like my buttons used to when my stomach was still big. I fixed the problem now.
Okay, he's talking about the stomach now because mine is out today. I'll get there one day fresh.
Brother, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, bro. I can't complain. It has been a rough week.
Yes, sir.
But I can't complain.
Incredible episode yesterday, talking Pan-Africanism, talking 30 years of democracy from a Pan-Africanist perspective. So shout out to you.
Yeah, no, thanks a lot. Absolutely. But, you know, being with you, a history student and someone who loves and knows so much of the history of the world, it makes it easier and, you know, much more interesting.
You know, when we had Bongani Bingwa from Talk Radio 702 on the podcast 2 weeks ago?
Yes, yes.
A part of me was sore because he studied history. He has a degree in history and English.
I watched that episode, bro. That guy is something.
I'm probably the biggest lover of history that never studied history in university. And I wish I had.
You always wanted to study. You can go back, but I've told you, go and do international relations.
I'm there. Okay. But we're here right now. Let's talk about the week that was. I think let's start with President Cyril Ramaphosa's address to the nation last week, Sunday, that the DA has taken issue with because they feel, no man, but he turned it into, was he speaking as a South African president or as an ANC president campaigning? And the DA have gone as far as saying that, you know, based on electoral law, the ANC should be penalized 1%. Of whatever that result is at the polls. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, Fresh, the DA has always already approached the electoral court in this regard. But I did watch President Ramaphosa's addressing the nation. Firstly, correctly so, on the eve of the elections. It's common practice, you know, as a head of state, he was supposed to. But I think they have been in the campaign of political parties so much that he forgot which cap to wear on that particular day or at that moment.
Blur to the lines.
And also, when you want to see that this was not handled properly, the announcement that the President of the Republic, Mr. Ramaphosa, was going to address the nation on Sunday, the past Sunday at 6 p.m., it was done haphazardly and very late. You know, it was not given enough time. The notice didn't come up on time. I think we got to know on Saturday evening that the president will address the nation on Sunday evening. And that's where the DA is. But I looked at and I listened to the president's speech. I actually at some stage had to, you know, like, is he still in the campaign rally of the ANC? Because a day before on Saturday, they were campaigning, they had a rally at, you know, the Siyanqoba rally. And the president, to be honest and fair, and as an independent analyst, I can tell you the president lost it there. He was talking about the successes of the ANC, how people, well, not mentioning the way that the people should vote the ANC, but people should recognize the successes of since the ANC took over government. It is a fact that the ANC is in government, is in the political party in charge, not everywhere in the country. In some municipalities, they are not in one province, they are not. And nationally, you know, they are leading the country. But I think the president had actually committed an error by talking as if he was talking about the successes of the ANC and not that of government for a peaceful transition. I mean, from the last elections to the current elections, because that was the purpose of the address. To you know, tell the nation how to behave and conduct themselves towards the address. But I think they were also suffering from the, you know, umkhonto wesizwe, Zuma myelitis fever. Because what happened was...
Do you think, because they deny it, but do you think they are rattled by the MK?
Fresh, they may deny as much as they want, but I think they are very rattled by the MK. One, going back to the media interview, the president or the leader of MK, President Zuma, had three major interviews from the weekend. The Friday, it was with BBC, Africa. On Saturday, it was with Newsroom, Africa. Then on Sunday, on Saturday after Newsroom, Professor J.J. Taban, one of the leading media persons in the country, on the platform of ENCA, announced that they will air the one-on-one interview. And everybody went to Nkandla to interview President Zuma. So you can see how the coverage, the BBC, Newsroom, Africa, and ENCA, those are big media houses. I think they were rattled. But also when you look at the performance of MK, when you look at the polls of these various institutions that are doing their polls, I would be rattled if I was in the ANC as well. I would get worried to say, we undermine these people, and these are the people who are not organized, who don't have a formal structure, and they manage in less than 8 months to can organize themselves to what may actually turn the tables around as soon as, you know, the results are completely out. And we will hear probably by Monday, Tuesday, the final results, but I think it's going to have a serious impact on the ruling party.
Are the DA reaching in saying to the electoral court the ANC should be penalized at least 1% of whatever the result is?
Well, I do not know what informed the 1%, but there's a prescription in the Electoral Act that a political party that has created or, you know, went into a misconduct towards the election, they can be penalized. It is well within the Electoral Act, and the court may implement it. Do I think the DA will succeed in this? I think if the Electoral Court is fair and they're going to go and re-look and listen to what the president said, I think the DA has a case. It will be unfortunate. Look, 1%, you know, at this juncture, 1% will mean a lot for the African National Congress.
Absolutely. It's the difference between 49 and 50.
So, like I've always said, the DA knows how to play in courts. They know the laws and they are quick to implement the laws.
No, they're the masters of law.
Yes. And the electoral court, look, they've been having a lot on their plate. They worked. I don't think the electoral court has ever worked and functioned and performed the way they've performed with these elections. You know, these are watershed elections and very seriously so. But there's a lot that's still going to come in. I mean, the IEC itself, I'm expecting challenges to the IEC. I'm expecting court challenges to the IEC.
In fact, I was going to say, I mean, looking back at Election Day, there are pockets of things worked well.
Yes.
People were in queues, but the queues were moving.
Yeah.
But I almost feel like you have an unprecedented number of people who were frustrated because either they waited or the ballot papers arrived an hour or two late, and I've been here since 5 a.m. It's now 7, 8, and there's still no ballot papers. You have people complaining about the ink pen that you're supposed to mark that you've voted. Some are saying the pen was dry, and it's not writing properly.
They use common cookies.
I know in Joubert Park, in downtown Jersey, people were becoming restless because we've been waiting, we want to go home.
Yeah.
You're even having people saying some of these glitches may have been deliberate to frustrate half of the electorate so that they leave and don't vote.
Fresh, I'm one of those people. I live a walking distance from my voting station.
Sure.
And I had decided that I'd be very early. You know, I didn't expect to be number one on the queue.
Sure.
And I had to leave and go back and vote after because of the queue. Look, it is good for democracy and it is good for the IEC and for the country that people, the turnout was so well. It was so good. It shows that people have heard the calls from political parties to say, don't sit at home, Botswana, go and vote. But and the IEC expected it. Sure. I mean, because they knew the numbers. They knew that we have 27 million potential voters, and they've been saying they don't want 80 or 70%, like the last elections there was about 60 to 64% of the turnout, but the IEC would have been happy if it's over 90%. And for them not to be ready for that, and for me it raises the question that why would they do that? Why would they've got more resources now, they are more experienced. This is the sixth, you know, national elections they are running, and they've performed very well over the years. For them not to look, glitches are normal. they happen everywhere. You can't have 100%.
True.
Where you can, it's very good. But when you look at the glitches that people experienced.
And you have the benefit of experience already.
Oh, exactly.
You should be able to anticipate some of these things.
Exactly. I mean, one of the things that, for example, that ballot papers arrived late when the IEC CEO and commissioner, as well as the chairperson, have been saying we are ready, we have been given all the resources that we wanted and the support.
You got ballot papers to London on time.
And Joburg Park, by the way, is the largest voting station in the country.
Outside of London.
Outside of London, you understand? And they didn't have things ready there on time. And look, the delays of an hour or two, but once it goes to 3 to 5 hours, and sometimes cookies don't work. But the worst is, after the Rothschild family bought into, and this is what is concerning, this is where I'm going to say things that may support the, what do you call it,
the those conspiracy. Theories,
the conspiracies to say some of the things are intentional. It's exactly 2 months. In April this year, the Rothschild family bought into a system that is overseeing electronically the process of IEC.
Okay.
And they even sponsored Telkom, because remember Telkom had some of the best, you know, advanced 5G system due to the 2010 World Cup. Mm. So they've set a map. Now, this family, which is a British family as well, you understand, they bought into that. And we found that the scanners are not working. Some scanners, some voting station had to go manual.
But I was told that the scanners and the system should be able to work offline.
That's why the IEC issued a statement after to support. But it looks like the managers of the polling station or the people on the ground, the social who were supposed to use them, they didn't use them. Then they resorted to manual checking of candidates or of the electorate. But imagine Joburg Park, which according to the IEC has 16,000 voters, and you know that area in Joburg, it's chaotic naturally and every day. 16,000, and you have to go through 16,000 names manually.
Sure.
And I think the IEC, they had something to add. But there's a lot of other things as well, Fresh. You know, there's something that concerns me, and this is not a fault of IEC. It's just me being an analyst and a person who normally doesn't vote. So when we say elections and your vote is secret, tell me why would... And I'm told it's the first time, it never happened. And why would the IEC produce envelopes where you put your ballot papers with the envelope that has your name and your ID number? What happened to the secrecy? Who wants to know who you voted? Why does it have the name and the ID number of the voter? And it means it exposes you.
It should be anonymous.
It should be anonymous. Why should they have the details of people? Understand? Why wouldn't... Well, they have a reason why they have envelopes. For one ballot didn't go into the envelope. Two went into one envelope. It's an administrative process. That's understandable. But why is that envelope having the name and the ID number of the person? Now, somebody who is holding a political position can easily know who I voted for. And those that expected my vote can say, we expected your vote and you didn't vote for. So there is no secrecy, there's no privacy in this whole process. And that's why I'm saying, at times, democracy and elections are not fair.
Sure.
Because they're exposing people who don't want to be exposed. You can't tell me that nobody will ever know when it's human beings that are going to open those envelopes and 4 or 5, 6, 7 political parties will be next to that official. They will see whose name is that. It's exposing people. And for me, that's a concern.
Do you think the IEC's voter education was extensive and effective enough? Because right till of election day, there were still people who didn't know left from right, that if I'm registered at X station, I can only vote at X station. Yeah. If I haven't applied for a special vote, I can't just show up and say, I need a special vote all of a sudden, because you're not registered, therefore you're not on the system as a special vote. Do you think there was enough voter education, or do you think it was assumed that we've been doing this for the past 6 elections, therefore they must know?
Now, Fresh,
despite the fact that you have a whole cohort of first-time voters.
Yeah. Despite that, the Electoral Law or Act changed. It included the independent candidates.
Sure.
It included the third ballot. I've listened to the IEC chairperson Ntate Mosotho Mopea, saying no, but the release statement, there were briefing and press conferences, and it's over a year since this act was passed. But that's not enough. That's what I'm saying.
I was expecting to hear on every single radio station some sort of this is what we do now.
Exactly.
This is what the new Electoral Act states. This is what is expected of you. I expected education ongoing on radio,
that,
on TV, in print.
Especially that the majority of the voters in South Africa are people from rural areas and illiterate, some of them. You understand? Mm. It's if you go and you broadcast in a language, in a radio station of the local language, it would have been better. I don't think the IEC did enough to can educate people about this. And it may have been deliberate fresh to can retain the status quo of the ruling party and with the opposition to satisfy the white people in the country. I mean, to satisfy the status quo of the political settlement, the negotiated political settlement. These elections, for me, it was very clear that with the arrival of Umkhonto we Sizwe, the growing of the EFF, and other political parties, independent candidates, people are more awake, people, they are more robust, and they were going to change the game completely. But the IEC didn't do much. You know, even myself, some of the lessons I learned about Section 24, or the whether you can vote at which, you know, region and area.
Sure.
I didn't learn it from the IEC. You know, as much as I read and I get it from and I follow them, I actually learned it from talk show radios and people on TikTok talking about it, the WhatsApp groups I belong to. They could not even reach out to a person like me who's in the media almost every day and reading and informing myself. But imagine for a person, people don't sit and watch press conferences. You can't use a press conference of the board of and the executive of the IEC and say you have communicated with the nation. Because I can tell you, less than 10% of the voters watch that press conference. And it can't be the tool to be used. You can't say it was mentioned on SABC TV and radio. Who still watches SABC TV and radio? Understand? But again, mentioning something in passing or on the news when a bill is signed to be an act of parliament, it's not educating people. Educating people is going to the people.
Being intentional.
Yes, you understand?
Now we're going to teach you about, if you haven't registered in this place, you can't vote in this place.
It must be part of the program.
Absolutely.
You must have had it as a program to say, this particular month we are going to be focusing on where you have registered. I mean, as recent as Tuesday night, my sister had to call me and said, you know, the last time I voted, I was living somewhere in Boksburg, and now I'm back home in Randfontein. Does it mean I must go and vote in Boksburg? And I said, yeah, yes. She was not aware. I mean, this is an educated person who works at a university. But I think the IEC did us an injustice there. And I must say, as much as we must not put a blind eye on the good they have done, in this instance, they failed the nation. And for me, it makes the elections questionable. If people are going to be in the queue, that were some I've seen as long as 1994 queues. That's why people have been saying the 2024 is our 1994. So you expected those numbers. And people got agitated, walked away. You know, some said, I'm not going to vote. So we have lost on that vote. A vote that would have influenced the elections. And that's why I'm saying there may be legal challenges to these elections after the elections. I would not be surprised if some political parties go to the electoral court or the courts to say, but you have failed us. I mean, to say you have a scanner that works. It also, I'm not an IT person, but it doesn't make sense. You've got the network, it's communicated. It's supposed to, when you scan my barcode ID, I thought the intention is to make sure that when I leave that station, I must not be able to go to another station.
Because you've been ticked as voted.
As voted, because the scanner will send an information across
the network.
Yeah. Now, if you say it can work when it's offline, then what is the purpose of that? It's as good as you are doing those things manual. At this age, why are we still have? If the manual is a backup, yes. But if the majority becomes backup, now we will resort to using what was supposed to be backup, then we have a problem with that. So those are some of those glitches, despite what happened in KZN and KwaZulu-Natal.
And the Eastern Cape.
I mean KZN and the Eastern Cape, yes.
In fact, because I was in Umtata last week, Saturday.
Okay.
And I remember as we were driving from the airport with our hosts, they were telling us about the taxi violence, the strike that was going to happen, and Santaco saying we know nothing about this. It was another taxi organization.
Now, actually, I listened to Ntate Bishop. I just remember the first name. His name is Bishop. He's a Santaco leader in the Eastern Cape.
Yes.
And he conceded late during the week, I think around Wednesday morning, that it's actually their members who went on to that strike, but it was not sanctioned by Santaco because of their dissatisfaction and the treatment by the police and so forth. So, I think they owned up to that, but it disrupted the elections. And not only the national elections that were on the 29th, but also the first 2 days of voting.
Special votes.
Because remember, there's a lot. Special votes were 1.6 million registered people for special votes. And by closure of business on Tuesday, the IEC said 960,000, almost a million, had voted on special votes. But you have lost because of the taxi violence in the Eastern Cape, the strikes, and many other things that, you know, it happened also in KZN, where taxi operators, you know, blockade the road because of dissatisfaction. But you know what, Fresh? I think we are going to see some of these things happening from Monday. We are going to see people protesting. We're going to see people burning tires. We're going to see political parties protesting that the elections were not fair.
Sure. What do you say to those looking at the battery of bills that President Ramaphosa was signing closer to the elections?
Last minute.
Yes.
Let me sign these things off my table. Look, so,
and even if it was part of electioneering, is it wrong? Because, I mean, if there's a bill that's going to benefit victims of GBV,
yes,
then we all win that it's signed, whether it's for electioneering purposes or not.
Look, the work is done. Yeah. What I always say is that we complain when the government is pulling its slow legs and chains are not moving. It's done. Whether it was his strategy to do, you know, it's like almost six bills that the president has signed in the last week or two. And those are very critical bills. You know, some it has to do with the construction and the benefit of BEE changes, the GBV, and there's quite a lot of them, but they were important bills to be signed. I am glad that he signed them off, and I'll tell you why. Let's assume he gets replaced, whether by the ruling party belongs to or they lose the elections and Steenhuisen becomes the president of the country.
Sure.
It saves us as a nation that the new incumbent or the new president, whoever, will not say, no, I'm not signing this bill. I found it here. I wanted to go back to, you understand? So it saves us. It's good that it's signed. If it needs to be reviewed, those who are coming into power, they will go through the review process of the Act of Parliament. But I think if it's a strategy to have said, he said, well, look, people don't know about bills. People don't care which bill you sign. Very few percentages will have an impact, like the GBVV one. It will have an impact. I've got my own challenges with that bill of the GBV because everybody still talks of GBV as if it's directed to women only. You know, people are still silent about abuse of men and gay people in their society. So that bill addresses that. But the noise that people talk, they still talk of women being abused. The domestic violence is men to women, men to women. And for me, we should educate people and talk about how violence on its own.
We have a violence problem.
Yes, we have a violence problem as a society.
And if we're to be honest about it, yes, GBV is a problem. Yes, the abuse of children is a problem. But you're still having more black men die at the hands of other black men than any other section of the community.
Exactly. 18 black men are killed by black men every day. 18 black men are killed in South Africa every day by other black men or by men or maybe by women as well. Sure. But those are some of the challenges. But one of the things that I've realized as well with the president's speech and the signing of these bills, one of the things he did just before the elections, you remember the 300 soldiers that they've put them after the July unrest?
Oh, yes.
They were still on the streets. And they have extended their term until, I think, the 6th or the 7th of June. And I was sitting there and I'm saying, but President Ramaphosa, the statement is to say they are supporting the police to can have a peaceful elections because there's been disruptions and threats by taxis and other political parties. So we think, as South African government, we think it is important to have the soldiers boots on, rifles, supporting the police who are dismally failing to do their work to control violence and thuggery in the country. And we think they are only required when it's election time. What happens when there's no elections? There's been an outcry in the country to say, in order to keep violence, robberies, armed robberies, Cape Flats violence, can the government use the military, because we have the military that is capable of doing that? Mm-hmm. The government has just put earbuds or plugs in their ears, not hearing the people. But because of elections, so is the government saying the lives and the safety of the people is only important when it's time to vote, when you are a vote? Generally, when Westbury, Cape Flats, Kwama Tuba Tuba in KZN or Soshanguve, famous violent place where people are being shot and killed almost every month or every week, is the government saying it doesn't matter? So we don't need soldiers to can back the police or support the police to keep that? For me, it's very disturbing that we have resources that we can use as a nation to can curb violence, to can have soldiers on the street so that people are not being hijacked. They are sitting in military barracks doing what? What are the soldiers? We've got one of the biggest armies in the continent. What are they doing in the military barracks? We use them only during elections. Sure. After elections, no, we can go and kill each other again. I think it's an unfortunate statement that the president has sent to the nation.
Speaking of the president, before we move on to other issues, there was an article journalist Thabo Makwakwa wrote.
Yes.
Talking about how President Ramaphosa has been placed there to destabilize the ANC.
The ANC.
What are your thoughts on that article?
You are even using, you and Thabo used the nice words. I said to come and finish the ANC when I read. It's an old article.
Yes.
I think Thabo Makwakwa wrote it around 2018.
Yes.
And he was very, you know, blatant in that article. But when you look at what has happened to the ANC since President Ramaphosa took over, and the breakaways, the controversies, there's been a downslope. You know, the ANC has not been going up. I will be very, very shocked if the ANC in the last elections, I mean, in Gauteng, they had like 51% Madoda score. National, they had about 53-54%. I will be very shocked if they get anything. I've said, put my numbers between 43-47%. But Thabo was correct, Fresh. If you look at the president, and I hear the presidential spokesperson defending that part, which was also part of Thabo Makwakwa's article, to say one of the things that President Ramaphosa has done was never to reshuffle the cabinet in order to keep continuity. Continuity of what? Of failures. Continuity of failures. I wish I would have interviewed Vincent Magwenya on the day to say, yes, he never reshuffled the cabinet. He never changed because the people were failing. Now, if you are a leader and people are failing, the police minister is failing, everybody else is failing, and you instantly increase the cabinet and keep the dead wood still sitting on those positions. But call it a conspiracy theory, it's politics of this country. Mr. Ramaphosa is being seen as a tool of the white capital. And I think the ANC was becoming, this is my interpretation of Thabo Makwakwa's article, the ANC under Jacob Zuma with the RET group and the unions, they were becoming radical again. They were saying, we have done the negotiations, it's enough. From 1994, we've been, you know, playing at the back seat. We want to take up the struggle to an economic freedom now to transform the country. So the ANC was becoming more radical. They were going back to the initial policies and implementing black economic empowerment and radical policies. Mr. Ramaphosa came and reversed all that. Or his administration is still the ANC, but it is his administration. And they, even when they realized they were doing wrong, it was okay, you know, for them to keep quiet. Look at how much he borrowed. His administration borrowed from the IMF, the World Bank, and, you know, and donors to the organization. But also under the ANC, for the first time, the ANC went bankrupt. It went broke. They couldn't pay salaries. And he has been keeping his head up on, even when people were telling them that they're doing wrong. Although it's been in the nature of the ANC to defend their wrongs, but it was happening at a very high scale at the moment. And I've said, It is like the president had somebody he reports to. He delayed in making and implementing decisions. He delayed in signing bills. We spoke about it. I'm happy he signed them last minute. They are signed within the time frame of 5 years. But bills that were sitting on your desk for months. Why would you sign them on your last week in office? Because it was literally his last week in office.
Sure.
And I think people of the African National Congress must revisit what Thabo Makwakwa wrote. There were a number of those articles. One of them was written by a lady called Papano Pasha, who's very active in the ANC.
Sure.
And saying, actually, Ramaphosa is there to come and finish the ANC. He's there to come and deliver the ANC that is being radicalized. Mm. And now the birth of controversy has actually supported what Thabo Makwakwa had written years back. Because now ANC members like Jacob Zuma and others have come up and said, but this is not the ANC that we fought for and we have created and we have lived for. We therefore have to fix it and we'll form controversy. And that's what transpired. But some of these things, when they happen, we thought Thabo Makwakwa were negative and it's conspiracy theories. But when you look at what actually transpired, Thabo Makwakwa may have been right. And but we'll see when the results are out. The ANC is an enemy of its own. You know, they've destroyed themselves. They've brought themselves to where they are, despite the good work that they have done. And only results of the elections will tell if people are happy or not happy with the ANC and the administration of Ntate Ramaphosa. Yeah.
In closing, let's cross to Europe, the ICJ.
Yes.
Thanks to South Africa's presentation at the ICJ has pretty much said to Israel, you need to stop now.
Did they stop?
But, you know, I think the very same day there was a bombing, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And an apology when it turned out that it was civilians who were killed.
Yeah.
Women and children included.
And they claimed that it was a little bomb or a small bomb. I don't know, a bomb is a bomb, whether it's little or small.
And I mean, I even said last week that nowhere in the history of paper has someone who doesn't care ever did what was written on said paper.
Fresh, I think what binds the hands of, if they have hands, or the lips of the ICJ is that they can just put on paper and it ends there.
Sure.
The ICJ has no resources to can enforce. It's not like a country court has taken a decision and the law enforcement will enforce, whether it's correctional service or what. The application it meant about immediate ceasefire, the ICJ has decided, but there was also an application for arrest or warrant of arrest for the military leaders as well as the head of state in Israel or Jerusalem. So I think it's a toothless exercise. On paper, it will look good. South Africa will look good. But the children of Palestine will continue to be killed by Israel. And I don't know, like I've said before, if other member states of the United Nations organization and those who are supporting South Africa do not act physically to can aid and stop the war in there, nothing is going to happen. Papers can be written, and Israel has shown the world the middle finger.
Sure.
You know, every time actually they come out of court, Israel intensifies the bombing. You understand? And sadly, the Palestinians, you know, I don't know if you are aware what happened also during the course of the week. Because it was civilians who were hit and not Hamas, the civilians in Palestine, they created where the bomb created, what do you call it, a tunnel.
A crater.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they were sitting in and they lured some Israel soldiers. So approximately about 17 Israel soldiers, they actually buried in that tunnel by their own bomb after, because they were led by the Palestinians to be in there. You know, normal civilians to say some of your people were in there. So the situation is getting worse instead of getting better. And while the ICJ is sitting there and making very important judicial decisions, and again, for me, whatever will stop the war, it's America stop supplying Israel with arms, which they will not, but also the other countries around start to have defense mechanisms towards Israel or against Israel in defending the Palestinian people. That's the only way we'll stop that war.
But also, surely the system is broken that one nation can give a middle finger to the United Nations for almost 70 years and carry on doing it, but there's zero consequences. Nothing is ever done about it. But there's also nations that are allowed a veto that can stop anything from ever being done about it. The system is broken. Why are nations continuing to subscribe to that system? And yes, I mean, there's been a turn of events this week with, I think, Ireland, Norway, and Spain.
Yes, there's some Scandinavians.
Recognizing the state
of Palestine.
And maybe it's a good start. Maybe it's too little, too late. But the system is broken. Why do we continue subscribing to a broken system?
That's why I've always said and maintained that the United Nations, it's a waste of resources and time. It's a toothless dog. And all these countries that are lamenting, including us as South Africa, why are we still sitting at the UN when the UN is failing what we want? But I wouldn't say the system is broken. It doesn't exist. It was created for that purpose. Mm. Remember, some of these countries that are members of that veto system or the Security Council, like the USA, it's not Israel alone showing the world the middle finger. It's Israel and its allies.
It's all of them.
Understand? So if the United States thinks that Israel has been doing the wrong thing, why did they continue supplying them with arms? Mm-hmm. And Israel uses those arms against Palestine or anybody else that they see to be supporting Palestine in most recent weeks or months, Iran. But it's all of them. That's why the system, it's not failing, but it was designed in such a way that these countries will continue to dominate and erode. The purpose for me is to wipe off Palestine from the world map. Mm. And I think if the situation continues the way it's continuing now, they will end up, Palestine will end up in the next 20 years not existing.
I mean, nowhere in the history of war have this many journalists died. And still nothing is done.
It's done, yes.
That this many children...
Children, journalists, medicals.
And nothing is done. The only time Australia and Canada kind of stood up was when aid workers from that country...
From their countries.
And it's one person. One aid worker from that country is killed in friendly fire or whatever it was. Despite the fact that these guys said to the Israeli Defense Force, this is the route we're taking.
Yes.
This is the car we're in. This is what we are wearing.
They informed them, yes.
This is who we are.
Yeah.
They still killed them.
And they only made noise at that time because their own citizens were killed. And one or two people, as you are saying. But it shows how the life of the Palestinian means nothing to the world. It doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't care.
They don't care.
It's even worse. If you think they don't care about brown lives, they care even less about black lives. That is why what's happening in the Congo continues to happen.
Yes.
That is why
South Sudan,
literally every week, hundreds of women are raped in the Congo, and nothing is being done.
And we continue to pay membership and to belong to these organizations that like the UN.
The system is broken, Botsang. When are nations going to stand up and say, we need a new system?
Well, I think we are getting a new government in a week's time. Maybe me and you, we should start approaching them as civil society and say, leave and divorce the United Nations. There's no reason, there's no benefit in sitting there. It has costed us millions, if not billions of rands now to go to the ICJ. Mm-hmm. It has strained the relationship between us and Israel because the United Nations was failing to do its duties. Mm-hmm. You understand? In the last hour or last minute since the October 7th, war broke out, our foreign minister and Mena Lady Pando was, in and out of the country trying to lobby. And I think we should do what they're doing in the Western Cape, actually. Let me tell you, the Western Cape as a province, I know South Africans generally supported the decision of their country to go to the ICJ in Palestine. But the Western Cape, whether it is because there's a bigger... a Muslim community in the Western Cape. Maybe that's the reason. But they did support the South African position. Mm. And I think the Western Cape vote is going to show how the Muslim community in South Africa has organized themselves. And it's going to be very interesting.
Sure.
Let me tell you, because the Western Cape is governed by the DA, which is pro-Israel and anti-Palestine, you understand?
Sure.
So I want to see the voters in the Western Cape who have been very vocal, who have been on the street in supporting the national position, how they have voted in this instance, because the DA position towards the state of Palestine or the war in the Middle East, should not be in the Middle East, in Jerusalem and Israel and Gaza.
They pretty much sat on the fence.
I don't even think they sat on the fence, Fresh. I think they took a position. I think they took a stand. There are political parties that took a stand.
But they're not willing to call out Israel.
They are not willing to call out Israel. You understand? You can't sit and say the war, it's bad, killing children, but you don't say to the perpetrator,
and that we believe stop what they're solution.
Doing. Yeah, and you believe
and
it
then
no.
you leave it at that.
So the vote of the people of the Western Cape is going to be very interesting for me regarding the way they play the role towards supporting the liberation and the state of Palestine. But with the international organization, the UN and the AU, toothless dogs, we must actually divorce these bodies. You know, BRICS, it's more of an economic, you know, a block. It's focusing on, and we will do well by being there with giants like Russia and China and countries that are at the same level with us, like Brazil, you understand? But it will not have much of an impact when it comes to issues of war, safety and security, sure. and food security. It won't play a big role in that. It's more trade kind of relationship. But all these international bodies, which must start small, we must organize below SADC. We used to have SACU, which was a creation of the apartheid regimes. But we must start building on SACU.
Sure.
We must move to the SADC. Then we must move. You know, look at an example, and it's in Africa, the East African Community, the EAC, where Rwanda, Kenya, Tanzania, sure. it's functioning much better than SADC and the AU in general. The EAC has a parliament.
Sure.
They've got, when they pass bills or acts of their parliament, of the economic bloc or community, it's binding.
Sure.
While our SADC or AU decisions are not binding. You understand? So we can learn from the EAC on how to do things. That's why you look at that region. It's much more organized, much more stable, and it's the fastest
growing. There's
going.
Money moving
there's
around
there. There's
money
moving there. Kenya yeah. and Tanzania and all of that. Rwanda is stabilized and all that. So we must learn what the EAC done, and we must start here. Let's forget the African Union. That club of old people who go and sit in Addis Ababa twice a year to can show off their suits and have cocktails, it's just a use of a club old men. We should start doing what EAC is doing and the boys at ECOWAS,
sure.
Although unfortunately there is the military,
sure.
but also we were brainwashed to think that militaries or militant people can be leaders. And I looked at history. I looked at the best leaders Africa had. Or to be honest, go and look. Gaddafi, Kagame, Sankara. Now it's Toronto. It was military people. So this myth that military people cannot be democratic, cannot rule. If democracy is bringing us problems, then why should we stick to it?
Sure.
And when we can use the military to feed the people, to protect the people and the country at large.
I mean, I was looking at the relationship Botswana and Namibia have been cultivating.
Yes.
Just in terms of cooperation and common destiny, as it were.
Yeah.
That now there is a dedicated port.
Yeah, the port of Zambia and Botswana in Namibia.
In Namibia. Mm. There's a whole plan for a railroad from said port to Botswana, for instance. If I'm not mistaken, right now, Botswana citizens and Namibian citizens don't need passports to travel.
To travel between the two countries.
You just need your ID.
That's progressive.
You just need your ID. You don't need...
That's the progress that you see it's happening at bilateral levels.
Yes.
Understand? Why wouldn't we extend it to be a multilateral in the neighboring
to the
countries?
To the subcontinent.
Neighboring.
Yes.
South Africa has six neighboring countries. Yes, we may be having challenges of illegal immigrants and influx of people from, you know, economically struggling countries like Zambia. It can be managed. But if you look at Botswana and South Africa. Why do we still need passports to travel between these two countries? You
know, why does the border even close at midnight?
Well, exactly. When you can come and shop and drive back home or visit family over the other side. But the Namibian relationship with landlocked countries like Zambia and Botswana, as you have mentioned it has been very progressive. It's very good for economic trade and cooperation.
Sure.
I mean who will actually think that at some stage Botswana and Namibia were in international court for the battle of what is that river where you were recently in Kasani. You know, there was a battle of the territorial.
Yes,
even went to international court years back. But look at the cooperation. It shows that when countries are intending to progress and to cooperate and to work very well. Namibia could have said to Botswana, you took us to court for the battle of a river.
Yes.
I'm not helping you with anything. No, no, no. That's not how it works diplomatically. Mm. International relations and cooperation.
We find each other. We keep it moving. It's not personal.
It's not. And Botswana, and it's actually even different heads of states who went through that process. Mm. And Botswana being a landlocked country today, it has a seaport.
Mm.
And that's the kind of leaders we need in the continent. We don't want these leaders who run to Europe and to America to please their former colonial masters and imperialists, you know, and they don't care about their immediate neighbors. I mean, we have seen with South Africa and Lesotho Corporation, the Lesotho Water Highlands Project. Yes, that was a project that was started by the apartheid regime, but congratulations to the two countries post-apartheid that they maintained that relationship, and the people of Gauteng have clean, good water from the mountain kingdom of Lesotho. Those are the kind of relationship we want. We must extend it. Must extend it to agriculture, to minerals. You understand? I mean, we are sitting with Eswatini and Lesotho producing some of the best weed, marijuana, in the world that could be used.
It's a whole economy. Yeah. It's a whole taxable stream of income.
It's called a green economy these days. I'm telling you, when I last visited Canada, I was shocked to learn that the weed shops there and the what do you call them? The ganja weed shops and the coffee shops. Call it coffee, but the oils that people use, whether for their hair, their skin, or for health purposes, the best weed or marijuana or that, it comes from Eswatini. To be able to do that, or from Lesotho to export it. You know, they even said the one of Eswatini, it's stronger on this and is more forward. And I learned those things. And we were made to believe what? That weed is very bad. Generally, it's a bad thing. We were never told it. Now the countries that taught Africa that marijuana is very bad are the ones that want to own those weed farms in that. And I hope the leaders of Moswati and Kilitia, they're not going to fall into the trap of surrendering their God-given weed and farms that can plant the best weed on earth to the imperialists. Sure. But those are the kind of cooperation that we need. Mm. You know, we must start here at home and grow into the sub-region.
On that high note, I think we can call it a day.
Oh, thanks, Reg. Was it high note?
I think we've been puffing and passing and we've taken enough of a talk.
Thanks, my brother. Let's go and watch. And by the time we are back here next week,
we'll
definitely be having a new seventh administration.
Absolutely. Yeah. Where do people find you on social media online?
Botsangm at gmail.com, at Botsangm on social media handles, and on the telephone, it's 082-485-9100, and it's also a WhatsApp number.
Sure.
Thanks, bro.
This has been another edition of Hashtag Politrics, coming to you from Discover TV. Look them up. Check out their studios. Use their studios. Incredible, incredible service. You will love Discover TV. We're part of the Africa Podcast Network, and we'll be doing this again next week. Shout out to Pezulu Works for the cinematography, Otis the Flow Fraser for all of our imaging, show producer Skeleso Modisa King and Kuvesh Mohan, and most importantly, you for tuning in every week. Don't forget to subscribe, share the video clips, share the links, let the rest of the world know that we politrick every single Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Till next week, wishing you a wow week in spite of yourselves. We're out of here.